right club.
Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. Solly here, Sunday night in the Kill House, and I am joined by my esteemed certified master fitter colleague, Tron Carter.
Good to be here. Do I get one of those little titles, initials behind my name?
CMF. Tron Carter,
Tron
CMF.
Tron Carter, CMF. I need to add that to my signature.
I like that. I like that. At least put that. Is it not in your Twitter profile yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, if you don't know what we're talking about, you can go to our YouTube channel and find the video that we put together with the help of our friends, of course, at Callaway, where we sent Tron out to Carlsbad, and he went through the ringer on training to become a certified master club fitter. So anytime you guys have questions, you can send them straight to TC. Is that right?
They've been coming hot and heavy already, man.
The reaction's been very strong. What was the most haunting reaction was definitely that you circle the entire answer of a multiple choice test.
People were...
Well, what is that about?
People were shook by that. And they're like, well, I bet you struggle with Scantron. No, I don't struggle with Scantron because there's clearly a way to do it and a place to put it. But, you know, leave no doubt, and your first impression or your first instinct is normally correct.
What did you learn? If you were to sum it up in 10 seconds, what would you say you learned the most about when you became a master club fitter?
Oh, gosh. Most important thing I learned was how important the tape is. The fitting tape, yes. Knowing exactly where your strike was, and then from there you can really figure out tendencies and also figure out, you know, all right, was that a good strike or not? Was that indicative of, you know, a good strike, good tendency? And then from there, you can kind of proceed with the fitting.
So in a fitting, Callaway's distance fitting programs, if you're not sure if you're a Maverick Sub-Zero or Maverick Max guy, Apex or Maverick Pro Irons, you don't know what the best Jaws MD5 setup is for you, for the way you play your short game shots, you can get those questions and more answered by an expert over the phone for free. They offer 30-minute complimentary fitting over the phone. You can schedule appointments at callawaygolf.com/distance fitting. And yeah, we have to get you in the rotation on the phone lines to schedule you being the one coaching people in.
People have been asking me if I'm available. I said yes. So, and then, you know, Neil, I need to get him actually fitted. He resisted my advice.
Well, he's got a year's worth of stuff to correct because he had his driver set the wrong way for an entire year, which is...
Can't change too many variables at once.
You're not supposed to change only one variable at a time. Right. So check that out on our YouTube channel if you can. We have a lot to talk about. There's a lot of golf that has been played this past weekend. We are recording this as the Barracuda is, I think, still in the front nine. If something crazy happens, we're going to go back into the studio in the back half and talk about that. First up on the calendar, of course, is the WGC FedEx St. Jude Classic. Justin Thomas emerges as a winner by three shots, final round 65. He wins $1.82 million and takes an insurmountable lead in the FedEx Cup now. It takes at least 2 weeks for somebody to catch him at this point.
At this point,
it finally matters, right?
I think the PGA Tours, they're very relieved that, you know, it's not Lonto Griffin or somebody like that leading the FedEx Cup at this point.
I doubt many people in Ponte Vedra are rooting necessarily for Brendan Todd to be the player of the year and to win the FedEx Cup or, you know, win the Wyndham Rewards or whatever is coming up. But Justin Thomas, we did this last time when he was not a killer at Workday. Is he a dog or a killer?
I think he's still a dog. He didn't have killer tendencies off the tee down the stretch. He got rub of the green pretty good on that.
Oh, my goodness.
But, like, how are you missing there?
It was a horrible shot.
So,
I don't even understand.
A killer doesn't miss there.
I understand how they didn't get it. I promise we're saving Hamsterdam for Hamsterdam.
Oh, it'll
be. The coverage takes. We're going to let it fly. But we never got to see it go across the bridge. But the way the graphics work, I have no idea how that ball crossed the bridge.
No, I was even talking about the one that got hung up on the back of that bunker.
Well, he hit that one there. Like, he deserved that one.
No, I know, but like, how do you miss? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know,
I see what you're
on cruise control. How do you miss right there?
That was, you know, a function of, and we can talk TPC Southwind, but a couple pins that were like, hey, go get this pin if you want it. But if you hit a poor shot, you're going to pay the price. And that is why I think we got a separated, strong leaderboard. I know it ended up with a huge two-way tie for second, but there was, you know, really good dividing line shots. And we'll talk, we'll get to 16th a little bit later. So, JT was feeling it, going for birdies and just tugged a little wedge. And when you tug a wedge, it goes long and ends up in that bunker. And
that was the Neil miss.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I think it, you know, Southwind is not my favorite course in the rotation, but I think a good example of a golf course that creates some good entertainment on television.
Yeah, I think I'll come with some positivity on Southwind. I like it. It's a good tournament course. It looks hard. It looks like there's a lot of dog legs. You got to shape the ball. Greens are small.
It's not a driving contest, decidedly.
Yeah.
And for that, I like it.
And it was still a good test, even though it's soggy as hell right now there, too.
It held up very well, scoring wise.
Like, you had a good example on Twitter of Brooks on that little wedge shot.
Yeah.
You know, Brooks just not getting quite enough spin on it. And it was a matter of, you know, that thing would have stopped with another 18 inches, but the margins are super thin out there with the short grass around the greens.
I tried to combine 2 points into one with that shot with, you know, how good JT. So to decide to go after that pin, and both of them were out of position off the tee. So their third shots into the par five 16th were not where they wanted to be playing from, but it was a back left pin. And JT's in the first cut of rough, and he had to drop that ball down an elevator shaft with spin to get it to stop close to the hole. And if you want to go at that pin, which he did, he took on the risk and knocked it stiff. And you probably wouldn't have been able to appreciate just how good that shot was until you see Koepka come in. He's a little closer from the fairway, unable to get as much spin as he needs, but his ball rolls just off the back and then down a slope and does not stop in long grass. And it's like everything we've been talking about the last several weeks is he had a chip at the bottom of that hill off short grass to no green to work with. We didn't get to hear him really talk
through. And can play it a bunch of different ways.
We didn't get to hear him talk through all the options with Ricky, unfortunately, but he chipped it way past the hole and made bogey. And that is what I want to see in a PGA Tour event coming down the stretch. Like, guys deciding whether or not to take pins on. If you miss the shot, you're going to pay the price. And that decided the tournament right there on that hole. That was awesome.
Yeah, I'm shook by Brooks dumping it in the water.
On 18. That was everything burns kind of move coming down. I don't know. I can't figure that dude out, man.
Lou Brown tweeted something. He said, you know, Brooks isn't going to grind out an at-bat in the company softball game, which is essentially what he views the WGC as, right?
But at the same time, from everything I've heard, Brooks loves money.
Loves money.
Exactly. Loves money. And that he has
$455,000 is a lot of money.
I know he's trying to win it there on 18, and I'm not even reflecting that much on the tee shot. I mean, that's, you got to take on that water if you want to, you know, have a good shot at making birdie on that hole, and I understand that. But making double out of it cost him $455,000, and for someone that hear some rumblings that likes to gamble it from time to time and maybe spend some money lavishly and you know, plays for the money. We heard Joel Damon talk about playing for the money, and I think tour guys don't talk enough about how much the money actually really does matter to them. But he made it look like he didn't care there on 18 more so than, than was maybe reality.
It's funny because he plays for these trophies, and then I think the other, you know, and obviously the trophies equal money, but otherwise he truly doesn't give a shit about the tour events, and it's solely money in the tour events.
They actually had a fun graphic before the day today so the storylines going into it was like, will Koepka balance out his trophy case, which was four major wins and three PGA Tour wins, which I've never seen the tour really, you know, go out of their way to acknowledge the major wins and the fact that he hasn't won a bunch of tour events.
Speaking of tour wins, it was BS today. I think James Corrigan tweeted about it today. The tour refuses to acknowledge. So the WGCs are not, they're not just PGA Tour events. They're a collection of all the worldwide association of PGA tours or whatever they call it.
And it doesn't feel like that when you're watching it.
And even on the graphics, they refuse to acknowledge
European Tour wins.
Current year European Tour wins. It's like the most jingoistic
and career
self-serving thing ever. Yeah.
Yeah, at no point, like every now and then I'll see, I guess it's just how it's presented to us, but you'll see a graphic from the European Tour Twitter or something about this event, and you're like, oh yeah, it's also kind of a European Tour event, and it really, really doesn't feel like it. And you know what, this is Amsterdam creeping in, but I feel for like the British fans a lot, because from all signs, they don't see any golf when playing through happens, and Ewan Murray on Sky was beside himself. He was really upset today on the fact that the directors were not showing Tom Lewis enough, which was insane. And listen, I'd love to blame COVID for all that, but this stuff happened before that happened. But let's not quite get to that just yet.
Let's save the good stuff.
Save the good stuff. Brennan Todd held the 54-hole lead. Tough scene today. That's
shaky
twice.
Shaky today, yes.
That's twice that this year that has happened. And it, yeah. It sucks. I mean, he's had an unbelievable year. I wish he would, you know, hang in there a little bit longer on these Sundays. But He ended up tied for 15th with Ricky, of course, who shot three over today.
The broadcast crew was calling it out pretty early on. They were saying, hey, he's walking, like his shoulders look really, really tense and he's walking differently.
Yeah. It's got to be hard, you know, on the PGA Tour to wait around for a tee time all day. And, you know, it's not all that surprising. What was it? Timothy Frank, what this guy I followed on Twitter, said, Brendan Todd and Ben Ahn coming down the last, like a bunch of drunk girls coming home at 6 a.m. Yeah. They should have to carry their shoes. That was my tweet of the week. That was hilarious.
Ben Ahn hit some, I mean, they're talking about all the work he's put in with Fax and all that. And then he hit some good putts today and he hit some shaky putts.
The mega queef on the first hole today. But Daniel Berger made a run as well. He bogeyed 18, but he gave it quite a scare. Cashed my top 10 bet for this week. Phil Mickelson finished tied for second. That was kind of sneaky to me.
Yeah, and really, he had a bogey free round today, which you don't like. That's not very Phil like.
That is very really quite disappointing, to be honest.
Exactly.
Back to the JT note. Obviously, we had Bones on the bag caddying for him this week. His caddy, Jimmy Johnson, was out with experiencing some dizzy spells lately and is out for this week and next week. Bones on the bag for the first time in his career, caddying for the number one player in the world now.
That's so bizarre.
Whoever said in the tweet that, are we going to see Bones on the 18th green today, saying this is the most important win of his entire career? I was trying to find a picture of Stevie with the microphone in his face at Bridgestone, and I could not find one. But
how many shots of, certainly I don't want to skip over Tom Lewis. Tom Lewis shot 61 yesterday.
Well, can we talk about the Bones thing here? Because I was looking for some coverage on this of, you know, they saw each other on the range. They saw each other on the putting green or something. Already explained, you know, exchange pleasantries. There's no coverage on that. I understand. They're limited people
in
the field.
And then Nobilo whitewashed the shit out of it.
They didn't even cover it all day. But Phil rolls up to the tee and doesn't, like, say hello to JT or anything. Just says, hey, I've got a Callaway. And then like Bones looked like he was kind of laughing about it, that, you know, Phil didn't even acknowledge Bones' presence or whatnot. But it didn't seem pleasant. And I don't know the full story. I really don't. But you know, maybe I know more than I'm insinuating. But I don't. That was crazy that they just didn't even acknowledge that they hadn't spoken really to each other all day. At least maybe if they had, if Dottie had seen that or whatever, that's great. Let's share that. But yeah, I was missing today.
It's bizarre. Yeah. And it seems like just dig in a little bit more. Just do a little bit more work.
Like in golf, we don't have that many relationships like that. You know, the like team.
Spent what, 20, 25 years?
25 years on his bag.
Yeah. Probably a little bit more than 25 years even. Yeah. On the bag every week, every day. Stayed at the same hotels, ate breakfast together. I mean.
Yeah. It was bizarre, and I'm sure Bones is smiling a little bit even more about them winning the tournament this week. But fun fact, question for you: how many wins does JT have since Spieth's last win?
I know he's got three this year. Gosh, probably seven.
Nine. 13 wins for JT.
When was Spieth's last win?
British Open, 2017. 13th win for JT, 12th in the last four seasons, and the third fastest to 13 wins, second behind Jack and Tiger.
He's a predator, man.
And gosh, yeah, a couple that have just kind of slipped away. We had a couple questions. One of them, I can't find the name of it, but is basically coming down to, are we worried about JT's big right miss coming down the stretch of some of these tournaments? He got away with a lot coming down the stretch.
I'm just worried about the big miss. It's not left or right.
Yeah.
Like he's got it going both ways, right?
He missed big time left on 15, the ball that jumps across the cart path and across the creek, which is legitimately one of the luckiest breaks I think I can ever remember happening in a PGA Tour event. Blows it way right on 16 into the trees, blows it right on 17, and then blows it way right again on 18. But never horribly out of position, was able to recover and then take care of business and not, you know, he never doubled down on any of the mistakes. But, I mean, JT, he's got to be like a lock for player of the year now, right?
I would think so.
And yeah. Brendan Todd, of course, is going to win comeback player of the
That's
year.
That's what I'm more concerned with.
I guess that they brought up
Courage Award
four or five times, maybe not that many times, but, you know, saying he's a lock for comeback player of the year. That award doesn't exist anymore. They haven't given it out in 10 years. They renamed it like the Courage Award, and it's not something you give out every year. It's more, I know Jared Lyle got it once. I know Eric Compton got it once. It's much more of like overcoming something physical.
I still don't understand how Stricker won it twice in a row.
It's the greatest
comeback twice in a year
in tour history.
Twice in a row.
He broke the award. He won. It was 06 and 07 comeback player of the year, which literally don't call it a comeback. If the second year, I don't know how you could win it twice. But
many people are saying Patrick Reed's going to win Courage Award this year.
Yeah,
like Antti Faldo floated that on Twitter.
Yeah, he overcame a lot of adversity getting there.
And he's a true gentleman.
We got to get to some Bryson stuff as well. But why don't I believe, I'm turning this over to you for
please,
once.
Please.
Tell us about today's podcast sponsor, mid-roll sponsor, if you will.
Rain sunglasses. I got these actually a couple weeks ago.
R-A-E-N.
R-A-E-N. Not to be confused with R-E-I-G-N. Like Sean Kemp, the Rain Man, you know, that sort of thing.
Which I always thought Sean Kemp, the Rain Man, was like Seattle. Dustin Hoffman. No, I thought that was like Dustin Hoffman spelled Rain Man, but continue.
Anyway, I got some glasses from, and actually Freddie breaks my sunglasses all the time. I've told him, hey, you're not breaking these. I like these glasses, all right? So I have a small head, a narrow head, I should say. And I got the Remy model that in a size 49. They've got these in two sizes. So they're 49 millimeters, I believe, across, or that seems small, but got them in the brindle tortoise with green polarized lenses. They're fantastic. Living down here in Florida, you need the polarized lenses, especially being near the water, going out to the beach, all that. I don't fish as much as I should, but if I do fish, you need polarized lenses. They're just comfy, man. Like they just, it's tough for me to find sunglasses that fit my head and can be kind of dressed up or dressed down. And I'm blown away by them. They've got Carl Zeiss lenses in them. So about as good a lenses as you can find. And
Handmade. That blew my mind.
This is quality handmade shit we're talking about here.
GQ called them one of the best sunglasses for men in 2020. You see stars like John Hamm, James Harden, and Wiz Khalifa. They all love Rain. So if you're like Teron, get yourself a pair of Rain sunglasses at rain.com. That's R-A-E-N.com. Use promo code NLU. Get 25% off your first order. R-A-E-N.com. Promo code NLU for 25% off your first order. 25% off. That's a good
substantial,
offer.
Substantial.
That's a big time offer. Usually,
and they're well priced anyway.
Yeah.
Too.
So take advantage of that. Rain.com. Where do you want to go with this next?
Gosh.
Can we talk WGCs?
Let's talk Tom Lewis so that the Brits don't
get
on
us. They should have done that during playing through while we were doing the commercial there.
61 yesterday on Saturday with a bogey. Ties the course record.
If there was a cut, like he was in the bottom half of the field after two rounds.
Yeah.
Low-key, a beauty of the no-cut event is you can get a rare story like Tom Lewis shooting 61. What are you shooting? Sorry, today? I know
he shot 66 today, half of Mackenzie Hughes.
He had a five-footer for birdie on 16 and then bogeyed 17. He had a serious
look. He was right there. I don't think it would have mattered if he made the five-footer. I think he would have lost by one. Either way, JT was so good on 18.
Right, but if he's got to get that up and down, that's a little different thought. I think JT bailed out way right on purpose on that second shot, knowing I think at some point he knew he had a two-shot lead. But
yeah, I mean, and then Lewis shoots 30 on the front nine today.
Correcting myself, Brooks had just birdied 17. So it was a one-shot lead, but he would have thought he had a two-shot lead. But the shot he hit into 16 was the nutty part. He flagged it, and it barely rolled off that back. And talking about the Koepka shot earlier, Lewis had the same, a very similar shot, and he putted it up the hill to 5 feet. That was really the only way to get it close, but then he missed the five-footer. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, missed the five-footer. That one hurt. But that is some serious, serious golf. They seem to only want to cover it from the plane for a long period of time.
Which was a great bit.
You know? I guess it was, but golly, yeah, he was plus three starting his round on the back nine on Saturday.
I keep having to trick myself just fool myself and kind of remind myself that these guys making big moves in the FedEx Cup, it actually doesn't matter because everybody keeps their card.
I know.
After this year. But like, I mean, he moved up 79 spots from 191 to 112. Like I was looking at couple other guys and I'm like, oh man, they need this out in Tahoe and all that, and they still do for category and reshuffle stuff.
Yeah, you can get some pretty good perks. A ton of perks come with making it to East Lake. I mean, that's Masters, and I know Tom Lewis is
really even a ton of perks come from making it inside the previous year's top 125.
Yeah,
because, like getting in the players the following year, all that stuff. So I mean, I don't want to say it doesn't mean that much, but it means a lot less.
It is different when you're not fighting exactly for your card. You're right, but it is a much different year of kind of tracking how things come down here. Can we WGC wise? I can't tell if I'm supposed to care about this event. Like more no, I'm not being sarcastic. Like am I supposed to, you know, be especially amped up for this? And I don't know if that's necessarily a coverage take, but I think, you know, with it being the tour's biggest sponsor in what it's supposed to be an elevated event, I there was nothing that felt different about watching it. If anything, it was the opposite. Did you feel that?
Yes. I think some of that comes down to, and really, I don't think this changes with fans or without fans. Some of it just comes down to the coverage, right?
Yeah.
So,
all right, let's save that then if we can, and let's talk Bryson.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's talk Bryson.
So I missed this on, was it Thursday or Friday? I was stepped away from watching a little
Thursday.
Bit of
golf. This was Thursday. We were out on the golf course, DJ and I, and you know, he's like, oh, God, I guess something's going on with Bryson and fire ants. And
we're going to be watching way too much golf this coming week, and I had to get away for a couple of days, and just everyone melts down. Bryson hits his ball left, I believe, on the seventh hole, calls in a rules official to look at it. Of course, the rules official, Ken Tackett.
For the first time, he was actually polite to the rules official.
He was.
Which is progress, I think.
So I just want to, again, thank the golf gods for at least the service of that cameraman. He put himself in harm's way. He was very close to the conversation. So what he was arguing for, and I had to look this rule up, a dangerous animal condition exists when a dangerous animal such as poisonous snakes, stinging bees, alligators, fire ants, or bears, this is literally in the rule book.
That's quite the spectrum.
Yeah, near a ball could cause serious physical injury to the player if he or she has to play it as it lies. And I looked at that and I was like, technically, like Bryson might be onto something here. And then I looked at it a little bit closer, could cause serious physical injury. And Ken Tackett's like, dude, I don't see any fire ants here.
Do you also have to prove that they're fire ants and not just regular ants?
I would think so. I think it's got to be I couldn't. So this got scrubbed. This is another note of something worth noted that CBS
tweeted it. So Golf good on them.
CBS had tweeted it out, and it has since been deleted. Hearing some rumors, I guess, of the tour putting some pressure on CBS not to maybe, you know, discuss some of these things with cameramen and all these things that are going on with Bryson. And I believe the video of all the stuff that went down to Memorial has also been low-key taken down. So the Class X Tour strikes again.
DMCA Tour.
I didn't get to see the entire clip, but from all he wasn't up. It wasn't quite as bad as Memorial. At least Lambasting.
It was still patently absurd.
It was, but there, you know, if it had been pulled off, or I guess if Phil had done it, it'd have been using the rules to his advantage. It's a little bit of piling on Bryson, I think, a little bit, but it's also he brings us on.
He's
himself.
He's earned it.
Yes, yes, for sure. But not.
And then Brooks, the following day or 2 days later, you know, basically tries to point out an ant, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I'm not gonna take relief."
No, he points down. He's like, "Oh look, there's an ant," and Ricky, his caddy, like falls for it and looks over. He's like, I'm just kidding.
It was in a similar spot, though.
I think it might even, I don't know if it was the same hole or not, but he knew the camera was right there on him. Can we talk about another thing that happened Saturday? Did you see Brooks spray his ball way right on, I forget which hole it was in the back nine, into the heather? And he goes over to it, and I am not accusing Brooks of cheating. No one could literally ever know, but he just like says out loud, he's like, oh yeah, it's embedded. And reaches his hand in there and spends like 5 seconds messing around, pulls the ball out and shows it to the rules official. And was like, yeah, see, it was embedded, like, because there was dirt on it. And the rules official was like, oh, yeah, there's dirt on it. Yeah, that was embedded. And it was just, if a ball is embedded and I think it's embedded, I want somebody else to verify that.
Brooks is an alpha, man.
He is an alpha, but it was just, I didn't love it. If that was Patrick Reed, that would have happened too.
Oh, it would have been.
It would have been mayhem.
Game on.
Complete mayhem.
But I don't think Brooks has ever had anything even remotely questionable.
I agree with that, and I'm sure it was above board, but God, the camera was right there on him, and I just would have loved if someone else was looking down at that. And I'm not saying I'm glad he didn't win. I'm just like, that was just a little weird.
Especially when you're playing for $1.8 million.
Exactly.
Right?
I don't know. It was just a little off that the rules official was on his way over, and he runs over and picks it up like, oh, yeah, that was embedded. Got a good drop, and then hit it on the green.
Going back to Bryson, I thought we were in for a big week from Bryson. Opens with 67, 4 under first round. I think he was first round. He was off to the races. I think, I don't know if he started on the back, but birdied 12, 13, 16, and then two. I think he was 4 under at one point. And then he had a double in that round and still shot 67.
Did he try to drive 18 today? Who could say? But the graphic certainly looks like he tried to get somewhat close, or he just dead pulled a driver and was trying to get it, you know, into that neck of the fairway. I don't know, but they show him dropping on the other side of the pond and hitting into the green. I was like, yeah, that's not the part of the hole that we kind of wanted to see for that. You're going to tell me you don't have a camera on the 18th tee? I know what a hard camera is, but...
They were using the blimp on Tom Lewis.
That's right.
Or so the plane. So they didn't have that. I mean, so I do think it's interesting just going down the board because it was so tightly bunched, where especially this is the week before a major. And so it's kind of a clue to, you know, especially, you know, guys get all four rounds so they can work on stuff.
Yeah.
They can. So you've got Xander. I don't recall seeing a shot from Xander today, who finished T6 and shot 66. Jason Day shot 67 today. Shane Lowry shot 67 today. Chez had it going for a while. Chez had it to 10, I think, a putt to get it to 11 at one point.
Yeah, he bogeyed the last two holes to shoot 9-under. And he had a look on, I think, 15 that would have got him...
To 12?
Yeah, he had like a 12-foot putt on 15 that he barely missed. But
Oosthuizen, T6, he shot 68 today. Fitzpatrick... 68. He's been floated as a good fit for Harding Park.
That's what I was going to ask. Is like, how much do you look at TPC Southwind and say, you know, this is a great outlook for Harding? Is it good? Is it bad? Does it matter? I guess.
Like, I think I look at somebody because certain guys like Fleetwood, for instance. Fleetwood hasn't played a whole lot. He came over, a month late, teed it up at 3 a.m. and then teed it up this week. I think he was 4 or 5 under today. He shot he was 6 under. 500. He shot 65 today. So that's somebody who, you know, it sounded like he was kind of scraping it around earlier this week and then turned it on this week. Or, you know, finally turned it on today, fourth round in, and then should be trending for next week. So I think there are some clues out there. Can we talk Ricky a little bit?
Yeah, I was just going to say, and we're going to cover Harding Park, and we're going to do a whole preview episode that'll be out Tuesday. But Harding is, I don't want to say bomber's paradise, but it rewards driving distance. By like any measurement, basically. You know, I always refer to my hitters over at datagolf.com. They have kind of Southwind almost like a 25% similarity. It's like almost, it's not even neutral. It is like opposite reward for, you know, the style of play that fits or is reward at Southwind is not necessarily what's rewarded at Harding Park.
It's weird. I remember playing, this is kind of an aside and kind of personal. I remember playing against you at Harding Park. And we played granted we were finishing up on 9, mm-hmm. but I just remember thinking, God, like, yeah, you can absolutely hit it 40 by me on some of these holes because you're catching certain slopes and all that.
And it wasn't, there's not just a ton of movement in the holes, right? It's like pretty much in front of you and like, hey, hit it really far here if you want. So spoiler alert for my picks for Tuesday, there's a long hitting guy that I think a lot of us are going to be falling in love with. And I have I guess it's Brooks and JT are 10-1, I think I saw. And then, Bryson's next at like 14-1. So
I might preemptively RIP the cat.
Chilly weather.
Low.
He's already
low
out 60s, there.
High 50s.
He went out for a practice round out there today.
He's got good vibes from the place. He likes the place, but I mean, and should fit the cat's game.
I would think so. I'm curious to see how long and how tough they set it up, right? If it's a Bethpage all over again. But we're going to talk about that. Only thing I had to add about Bryson, about the rules official thing, was afterwards he says, quote, I'm always going to respect the officials and go, okay, no issue, that's fine. I was like, always? Because I'm pretty sure like 2 weeks ago you said, I don't believe that, I want a second opinion, and didn't even...
Even before he got the first... Exactly. Like he said that even before he got the first opinion, preemptively.
So I don't know if that quote necessarily rings true.
How about him saying he wants to live to 140?
Oh, God, I almost forgot about that. What the fuck is that? JT called him out. He retweeted it. Was like, dude, what are you on? Like, what... You want to live over 100 more years than you've currently lived?
I'm kind of getting to the point where we need to, like, at some point, he's a novelty and we give him a ton of attention. And then at some point, we stop giving him attention because he's clearly a charlatan.
Yeah. It's weird to me because I don't see the joy he gets out of the attention. Like, I feel like he's tortured. Like, you know what I mean? He's just super stressed and all of this angst all the time. Yet he brings so much of it on himself, but it's not. I wouldn't even say he loves the drama because I don't see him enjoying that. You know what I mean? Phil, you can see Phil enjoying
like
the shit.
Art.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. With Bryson, it just feels like he legitimately can't understand why people get so worked up about this stuff. And yeah, gosh, it just, I don't know if his current, of all the things, you know, that his current, fitness routine and diet routine have gotten him on. I don't think that's going to contribute to living till you're 130 or 140.
Yeah, or PEDs or whatever.
You whatever know. You're yeah, doing. Yeah. You listen, you said it, not me.
Which actually, I think human growth hormone is actually good for you. So I don't know. So maybe that's part of the plan.
There's the take. All right, what's next?
Ricky. Let's talk Ricky.
We got to talk Ricky. Big Randy, regrettably, can't be here.
He was shocked today that Ricky didn't win.
It's sad. It's unfortunate that he's not, because today is the day I have the least amount of fight in me to like ride for Ricky against Big Randy.
That's probably a good thing that he's not here.
Yeah, it is, but like, he would have enjoyed the victory lap tonight. It could have been a 30-second conversation of just like, yeah, he is what he...
I thought...
Were you a little... Did you feel a little something when he birdied the first couple holes?
Well, yeah. So on the first hole, he hits it to 10 feet 4 inches, misses the putt. I'm like, all right, game on, Ricky. Birdies the second, hits it to like 6 feet, and then almost jars it from 270 to the most tucked pin, narrow green I've ever seen.
Up against the water.
I was like, man, damn, dude. Like, that was a golf shot. Makes birdie, promptly bogeys the fourth. And you're like, all right. And then bogeys 7, bogeys 9, and just was a non-factor all day.
Stephen Barr asked, how the hell did Ricky ever win the Players in the manner that he did? It was some of the most clutch golf like I can ever remember seeing, and we haven't really seen that. So Fado said something about, you know, he was kind of going down the leaderboard of all the guys that hadn't won a whole lot on there, and he's like, you know, Ricky hasn't won a whole lot. He backed into that win at the Waste Management last year. And I was like, he like held the 54-hole lead. I know he shot 74 in the final round.
He had a bad final round.
It started raining, and he had that ball that freakishly rolled back in the water after he dropped it.
Which was sick.
Yeah, and then he birdied 15 and 17 to come home and win. So I don't know if I would say, I know he had a bad overall final day, but I wouldn't.
He steadied the ship.
He didn't back into it. Yeah. Nobody like gave it to him necessarily, I wouldn't say. So yeah, I don't have a whole lot more to add on that. You want to get to a couple questions we got about this one, and we can cover some other golf stuff. Alan Bradley, will Bones get the full 10% or closer to the 5K Kuchar gave L2K in?
I mean, I think Bones is, God, I would give Bones 15%.
Well, that actually is a fair question, though, because caddy payouts aren't, I would guess JT is going to pay him out full 10%, but built into those big percentages is
all
the fact
shitty weeks.
All that the guy rides with you. And if you're off for, you know, 10 weeks with an injury, like you sit and wait for those, you know, to come back. So,
but at the same time, Bones is not working.
Yeah.
He's not working for TV or whatnot.
Well, yeah, either. He wouldn't be.
He could have done Golf Channel, right?
He doesn't do CBS weeks. I don't believe. Maybe I could be wrong there. Gosh. But yeah, I mean, I would imagine the way JT views all this stuff. First of all, the way the Kuchar thing went down, I would be super hesitant to give anything less than 10%. But I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk deal. And I think a lot of guys would say, actually, like a sub in caddy,
7%,
maybe, yeah, might be. Yeah. But yeah, in a WGC, I mean, Bones, if he gets 10%, that's 180 grand.
Yeah.
For good week's work.
Well, the nice thing about a WGC is you know you're making at least 2,500. $3,000 because you're coming on with a paycheck either way.
I think Joel Damon might have started thinking about that at a certain point. He was climbing up the leaderboard.
Great shirt today.
Too. Made a double late in the round. He also had maybe the best audio clip ever. What hole was that? He hits a shot and yells, "What? Fuck you! Fuck all of you!
Fuck everybody! Fuck all of you!" That was awesome. They kind of reminded me of Happy Gilmore. It was so calm too.
He did end up finishing tied for 20th, made $106,000, which I really appreciated his perspective on money and how he thinks about it, and finally getting somebody. I was expecting more blowback on that from some people, and how he kind of says he plays golf for the money, and if he could, he would rather do something else for it. And not a lot of pros are willing to say that, but there are a lot of pros that feel that. And I can understand where he's coming from. He just says he's a homebody, and you know he likes to compete and wants to win championships, but yeah, he can... He can do that in a lot of different ways and hates like leaving home for a couple weeks at a time. So,
can we do a quid pro quo here?
Sure.
I want to recognize Colin Morikawa for putting well
this
week. And I would like you to recognize Scotty Scheffler.
There's not one negative thing I've ever said about Scotty Scheffler other than I have to root against him because of you. What did he finish? T10 or
T15?
T15. Great week.
And shout out to Honest Abe, 65, 66 on the weekend. So, Mackenzie Hughes -1.
Yeah, but it was par 70. But it wasn't wind gusty like Mackenzie Hughes' 66 was. Will Kelly asked, does Brennan Todd make a real case for player of the year? I think we kind of covered that. I think JT has that mostly locked up at this point. Especially, there's only going to be one major.
I was going to say, there's one major, but then you've got, let's say, I mean, Todd could knock off two FedEx Cup events.
He could. He really very well could. And that's, you know, I don't know, not to make this whole thing about distance, but a golf course that doesn't require distance, you're going to get some Brendan Todds in there every now and then. And that's, I think it's a good thing for golf. It may not, people, a lot of people think he's boring, all that, whatever. I don't really care. I'd rather have guys like Chez and Brendan Todd in the mix every week.
I mean, he is not boring. Every week, like, he's been boring. Shit, I remember going up to Chateau Elan to an AJGA event, my sophomore or junior year, a good buddy of mine was playing in this big showcase event up there. Just watching him even back then, like, he was the best putter I'd ever seen to that point. Mm-hmm. And nothing's changed since then. It's so jarring when you see him really wipe one, or really, like, some of those 4 or 5 footers he had today.
Sorry, it was Till Daddy that asked about JT's big right miss. I finally found that question. We've covered a little Southwind. I don't know if we had anything more to say. Tucker Blankenship asked, TPC Southwind kind of showed well this week, question mark.
It did, except for, it cracked me up, poor-ass tweet on TPC Initech, where, you know, it's got the office park next to it, and it's, you know, showing a picture of Lumberg or the guys smashing the fax machine out in the back. Like, I mean, it does, it's like they're the old Byron Nelson, and then I think Torrey's got some office parks.
The Byron Nelson one, I remember, like, the 14th hole or something like that, Mike Weir hitting this, like, stinger shot right at this corporate building. I remember that.
It's so jarring.
Very vividly. It's not scenic. It doesn't pop on TV, but I think, you know, competition-wise, it's got good shot value.
I would imagine.
It's got sticky Bermuda.
It'd be really, really good in the fall when the Bermuda kind of, like, when it stops getting quite as many thunderstorms during the week, it's less soaked. Bermuda starts not dying off a little bit, but just being a little bit less vibrant. That place really fast would be solid.
And it wasn't, you know, super hot and horrible this year. I mean, a lot of people were critical, ourselves included, of, you know, WGC this in Memphis this time of year, but it seems to have been kind of lucky with the weather.
I feel like at this point, I mean, half the country's
it's on fire anyways.
Wherever you go. So
is it Amsterdam time?
Not yet. Encouraged or discouraged on Spieth? Like, I want to keep him top of mind.
I would overall say, I hate to say this, but discouraged. Which is
just because of the dry, like, that foul ball drive today.
Yeah, it's just, we've seen enough of this to say he is kind of becoming this guy, right? Which is a good PGA Tour player, but not obviously not what he was. So I Justin Ray looked this up. He had this handy, actually. I wanted to kind of compare. You know, you can look at Spieth's stats for the year, and they're not pretty, like negative strokes gained off the tee, negative strokes gained approach, which bad ball striking. But I kind of wanted to look post, you know, return to golf, if there's any trends in that. I think there are some encouraging ones, kind of. He's 45th total in strokes gained for everyone that has at least 10 rounds. He's 66th in tee to green, 65th in approach, 108th in strokes gained off the tee, and 48th in putting. He's gaining 0.72 shots on the field overall in the return to golf, or since the golf has come back. That's not the Spieth we're looking for still, but it's not as bad as it has been. So
I feel like
we're stuck in this pattern though for a little while.
The night is darkest before the dawn, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's horribly dark though. I'm like more concerned that he's kind of settling into this role that is, he's just so hamstrung by the big numbers. Like I never feel like he's got it on the rails.
He had two doubles today.
Yeah.
After a good start.
Yeah. It doesn't, but never looks like he's in control. And it's good to keep him top of mind. It's crazy to think about. He's going for the career Grand Slam this week. I know. Like,
that's jarring.
Man. I don't think of him as, you know, a favorite for Harding Park. Famous last words, maybe. But it's jarring to think about he could win the career Grand Slam this week.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So.
And Greller, too.
And Greller. Matt Fitzpatrick, I don't know how much we talked about him. They kind of neglected that, but he had a really good shot coming down the stretch.
I get so triggered when they cut to him and he's putting a 6-footer or 4-footer with the pin in.
Yeah. Come on. We're the ones that have to do it with the foam noodles and everything, man.
You don't have to do this, man. DJ, like, or Thomas, we're playing this week and I'm putting on the last hole. And he's like, you know what? I'm pulling the pin out for you, man.
Well, it just seems Fitzpatrick seems to be like king of not prime weekend tee time and playing really well on the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to call him backdoor king, but I feel like we see him making moves almost every weekend.
Well, he should actually, I mean, this week he made his move on Friday. He shot 64 on Friday, Shot 69, 68 on the weekend, but I feel like he's just Mr. Four Round.
Yeah.
He's not going to crush it one day necessarily. He's just always, mm-hmm. you know, he's kind of poking around T20, T25, heading into the weekend, plays well on Saturday, and then kind of uses that to catapult him into a decent top 10 finish.
Which between Fitzpatrick and Tom Lewis today, if I'm a British golf fan, I'm pretty furious.
Yeah.
Like, it's all, it's just, it's ridiculous. And it are we ready?
Let's do it, baby.
We did our absolute best to wait 45 minutes before we...
I think we did a good job of not...
Yeah, it leaks in. That's kind of the goal of Hamsterdam. A lot of people ask, what is Hamsterdam? This is the coverage take containment zone, the DRS zone, if you will. We'll get to Formula One here on the back half. But
shout out to Bunny Colvin.
Yes, Bunny Colvin. He legalized drugs in Hamsterdam, in The Wire, in Baltimore, and it was... You know, that's to keep it from leaking into other parts of society, you do it in this one place. And that's what we try to contain it right here so it doesn't leak into the rest of the show. I haven't done a great job because I was pretty worked up today.
Can I lead us off?
Please. You please go.
That was the worst performance I've seen from CBS in the last 2 years.
They want you to forget Riviera this year. Please don't forget Riviera this year.
But this is, but I mean, at one point there's five or six of the top 20 guys in the world within a shot of the lead. You've got a couple other guys that are good stories. Tom Lewis, like they didn't show a shot of Tom Lewis. Tom Lewis was what, nine? He was like 14 or 15 under on his last however many holes, on his last 27 holes.
They completely missed the 61 yesterday, on Saturday. They totally missed it.
Once they pick him up, it's not showing his golf shots. It's showing the tap-in birdies or long putts after the magic has kind of passed. It's so lazy. It's just such a slap in the face. The commercial load today was abhorrent. I'm so fed up, man.
And that's where, kind of tying in where I'm at on, am I supposed to feel anything different for this WGC? Maybe it's just, you know, I hate to do this comparison because obviously we haven't seen NBC post-COVID and kind of the dial back production, but doesn't it feel like NBC treats Mexico like a Super Bowl? It is a big deal, and I get the crowd has maybe a lot to do with that, and you know, the different environment and everything, but they just treat this like it's the St. Jude. Like, that's how CBS treated it. Like, every other week on tour.
You know what kills me, too, is CBS seems to... They always use this excuse. They want to front-load the commercials. They want to front... You know what all the action is? Is on the front end. And, or, you know, not in the last hour. A lot of the time, the last 20 minutes or 30 minutes, do all the playing through or eye on golf or whatever you want. Because there's only three groups on the course at that point.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to give them the go ahead for playing through. They abuse the shit out of that. That's what I'm saying. I don't think playing through was intended for. I think it was. I tried to jot this down. Koepka was playing his 69th hole or 70th hole of the tournament, and he was on playing through. And I was just like,
how about the fucking Konica Minolta swing vision?
Oh, I know.
On the 71st hole or 70th hole of the tournament. And like, you know what? I'd love to see where his fucking drive went, guys.
He was putting to take the solo lead on the 69th hole of the tournament, on the 15th hole, and it's in playing through. That's your drama period, man. Like,
as soon as they went to, it was like, a four-way tie for the lead?
Five-way.
Five-way tie for the lead. As soon as that putt went in and they announced it, they went straight to commercial break.
It's just...
It's incredible.
I mean, it was comical. I was rooting against a five-way tie because I was like, they're not going to be able to keep track of this.
And then on top of that, all the PGA Tour commercials in the commercial breaks,
there's a new one,
FedEx Cup, you know, WGC commercial. And then
Grupo Salinas.
I do want to give a shout out to my friends at Grupo Salinas. I enjoy those commercials. Don't take those away. But it's just, it's malpractice, man. It's not good for the sport. It's not good. Like, I don't know. I'm a hardcore fan. I don't know why we watch this. It's crazy to me.
Yeah. The reason we try not to say these same things every week is like, it is what it is. But you know, today was one of those days where it is what it is.
Like, it just feels like such a middle finger to the people who actually give a shit about the product, which I don't know. I'm so frustrated. It's, they can say what they want about COVID and having less cameras and all that. It's not like, I know you've got your stationary cameras on all these holes. Like, just use them better, right?
Yep, it's very frustrating. That concludes the Hamsterdam section, I think, for today. Other than I got nothing more to say other than, you know, losing track of... They can't keep track of shit.
It's not an equipment issue. It's a production issue and a narrative issue. I guarantee, like, right now, the Barracuda, they're doing a far better job of, they know what the storyline is. They're going to follow that storyline. They're not going to, it's not golf on Golf Channel. It's hey, we're going to cover the Barracuda tonight. Every week is, this is golf on CBS, and we're going to jam whatever narrative is into that.
We're going to see what kind of golf we can fit into this window, but you're watching us right now.
I'm going to go back. I've got a couple guys sending me the coverage.
Oh, the stats?
I'm going to go back. I'm going to do stats. I'm going to log the whole thing.
Oh, they don't want to see that.
Cuz it was disgusting this week. And everybody's culpable. It's Jay Monahan for going back to CBS and saying, "Hey, do you guys want to re-up for another 10 years?" It's Sean McManus, it's Lance Barrow. Thank God you're going away, and really next week's his last week, right?
Yeah. They have no playoff events. They have Wyndham, right?
Oh, they have Wyndham.
Okay. I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So he's got two more weeks.
I don't know if he goes through the end of the calendar. No, I guess.
I think this is his last season.
Yeah.
So, and I don't even think they have anything as we get into.
I've tried not to look because I remember looking at it and getting depressed at how many CBS events there were in a row. Yeah,
because there's NFL football, so they don't, you know. But yeah, I'm fed up, man. It's ridiculous.
It is brutal. Let's see.
Can we talk about LPGA?
That
was a bright spot.
It was a bright spot. I feel like I had. Yeah, let's go. Let's do that. LPGA. Only issue I have, and I hate to start with a beef on it, is gosh, they could have scheduled the finish of that to be not right up against the WGC and another PGA Tour event going on.
Boned on Friday with the coverage.
It was a 54-hole event, which is sweet. I like that.
Yeah, I don't think it took anything away from.
Not at all. Inverness looked like it looked like a major championship from the little bit that I was able to watch. The golf course looks incredible.
Major championship leaderboard too.
Yes.
You know, there's what, five or six players under par.
Danielle Kang is the winner. I just wanted to see, like, do a Monday night finish. Like, give us, like, there's no sponsors, there's no tickets, there's no, I'm sure it's a Golf Channel thing. Maybe it's an LPGA, you know, charter thing or whatever it is. But that's an opportunity to get creative on when you finish the tournament, because they could have got some eyeballs if it finished on Monday night, I think, or Saturday or something like that. So I hate to start with that, but it sounds like a heck of an effort by everyone at the golf course to get that in with all the rain and the weather and everything. But it's good to have the LPGA Tour back.
Yeah. Hats off to Aon. They converted a lot of their sponsorship from the Risk Reward Challenge into this event to kind of bankroll that. So hats off to them. And I think, I think this is the blueprint for a lot of LPGA events moving forward. And I know they've tried, you know, I'm stating the obvious here, because they've obviously tried to do this over the last few years with the LA event at Wilshire, the San Francisco event at Lake Merced. Like they're trying to go to, KPMG's at Aronimink this year. They're trying to go to more classic courses that have been, you know, more or less neutered by PGA Tour standards, whether it be logistics or distance or whatever. So I think that is absolutely the right thing to do.
Yes, they have a chance to corner that market 100%.
Yeah, I mean, on top of that, it was just, it was a great, great event. Danielle Kang played fantastic golf, kind of start to finish.
I'm sorry for your girl, Celine Boudier, who missed a short birdie on the 72nd,
I felt
54th
that,
hole.
I felt that deeply, too. Like, I thought she made the wedge. Like,
it was stuffed
in the air. They're like, that's all over the pin. That's all over. I thought it was going to go in. It spins back a little bit to, you know, 5 feet. And then she, very, very tentative stroke. But I love watching her. Going back to Country Club of Charleston a couple of years ago. And she's just.
Corn Ferry Tour. Your boy Ryan Ruffles had a good opportunity.
I'm gutted for him.
I know. You've been placing a lot of bets on him. Fake bets on him.
Yeah, and actually some real bets. you can't draw up a better scenario where he's the only guy left on the course within three shots of him and had to basically play the last four in one under par, birdies 15, and then, you know, promptly two bogeys and, you know, doesn't get it done. So I think it's his seventh runner up or seventh top three finish. Worldwide.
Win is coming.
So yeah,
he's earning points out the ass, and he's
playing his ass off. Hats off to him. You got to learn how to win, you know, and winning's not easy. So keep it up, man.
Barracuda is going on currently as we're recording this. Troy Merritt is mic'd up, final round leader, mic'd up, which I'm excited to go get in front of a TV to watch.
I've shit on Troy Merritt a lot just for how he's dressed. I'm kind of coming around because it's so bad, it's good. He leans into it.
Went white belt for the Sunday.
And he's gotten so much out of his talent, too. Mm-hmm. I think this would be his third PGA Tour win, which I feel like the third one is a huge win. Right, because it gets you status, or at least right now, it gets you status on the Champions Tour. It gets you just kind of bumped up into a different category. And then my guy Matthias Schwab who was on my fake Ryder Cup team.
That's right.
Remember I drafted him. He's currently in second, 2 points behind. And then Fabian Gomez is 3 points behind. Aaron Wise, 19 points today. Basically doubled his...
Stableford's sweet.
More than doubled his point total from the first 3 days.
Why doesn't a WGC do Stableford? That'd be such a great format.
Or like all the tournaments that they added.
Yes. The Workday could have easily been Stableford.
You know, and same thing on the Korn Ferry. Korn Ferry Stableford would be sick
because
they make even more birdies. Mav is currently five back. He's at plus 33 right now. He's hanging in there.
I'm rooting for Mav hard. I really am, but I don't know if I can take a week's worth of Mav and Danielle Kang stories from every golf outlet. And the boyfriend and girlfriend won on the same day. But I mean, that would be an incredible story. Let's be honest.
But bottom line, all in on the Barracuda, the new venue for that old Greenwood up at Tahoe. It's been firm. It's been windy. Angles matter. Great leaderboard. I've enjoyed watching it all week. Props to the guys, especially Kurt Byram out there. Always enjoy him on the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it was funny yesterday. Omar Uresti out in front.
As a single holding up.
As a single, and he was holding up play.
ZB was in the group. ZB put him on blast on Twitter. That was great. Would you encourage him to tweet that?
I said, dude, you got to do it. ZB also sent a video. I guess he tossed his wedge in a lake. He went in after
Zach
the fact.
Tossed his wedge?
Yeah. Okay. He went in after the fact. He jumped in the lake last night and went back and got the wedge. It was sick.
Sam Horsfield wins the Hero Open on the European Tour.
Dietrich had kind of a tough.
Yeah.
Tough scene on the last there, but kind of a Morikawa finish there.
I would, in a normal circumstance, I would point out that he is the winner of it, got 24 first place world ranking points. But the Barracuda, also weak strength of field this week, also gets the qualifier, the 24 first place points automatically for it. So,
and he's a Gator.
I did not know that.
And your fiance is a Gator.
That's exactly right.
You don't want to piss off the Gator Nation, you know?
That's exactly right. Segments. You hate to see it?
Oh, gosh. So my bets.
Mm.
I had it rolling this week, folks. And you know what? Who knows? We still could find some gold up in those hills, up in those Sierra Nevada hills. But I dropped a Hines on everybody, which it's a six-way kind of all-way bet. $1.40 each bet, 57 ways. Sungjae doubled two of his last four holes today to basically take me out of the money on that. And I ended up, losing about $50 on that. Excuse me, 50 units. And then, I also had a top five on him. And then I had Ryan Ruffles at 70 or 75 to one to win. Yeah. So just a tough day. Could have been a banner day. Instead, it was a tough day.
Indeed. That's something you do hate to see. Yeah. I kind of struggled for one today. I am going to go with, my favorite racer, Max Verstappen, pits at the very end of the Formula One race today, the British
Grand
Prix.
He laid up.
I'm ready to talk to you about this. Can we save it for Formula One section?
He didn't lay up Christian Horner.
No, I disagree on this. We're gonna get we'll save Formula One for the end, but that was my you hate to see it. Rub of the green, other than the JT one that ran across the bridge, that's the biggest rub of the green I've ever seen, maybe.
Actually, I've got a hate to see it for you.
Okay.
Brandon Grace having a WD.
That sucks.
He's tied for second in the tournament. Not only does he have to WD from the tournament through 36 holes, which he was probably going to get a top five.
Yeah. Misses PGA Championship.
He also has to miss the PGA Championship. That sucks.
Yeah. You also hate to see, and this was going to maybe be my soapbox Sunday as well. You brought this up last week. The guy in 10th place in the FedEx Cup can't get in the FedEx St. Jude Classic. What the hell is the FedEx Cup? What's the sports equivalent of like late in the season? You don't even get a shot to like play for the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like you have a good record, but you don't even get to like play a game in an NFL game or NFL week or something like that.
I don't think there is an equivalent.
I don't know. Right? Like I try to think of a bye week for a college football team and everybody passes you or something like that.
I think college football is probably the best one. Where like if K-State hasn't played anybody all year, but they're undefeated and they don't get a look.
Yeah, you didn't qualify for this game, so your game got canceled and he had to go play.
And that's not only like, they also expanded the field in Memphis by a lot, then dicked over Reno. I hesitate to call it Reno this year because it's not Reno. They're up at the lake. But yeah, that's just like, not only did they do that, they've got up in Tahoe, they've got like Carlos Franco in the field. He's not qualified for the Champions Tour event this week. It's insane. He had to Monday into the Champions Tour event. Now he's trying to win.
Sick. 7 minutes ago, Jim Furyk won the Ally Championship.
Oh, he did?
His first Champions Tour start. Shout out to Jim. That's awesome. Congratulations. He won by two over Retief Goosen and Brett Quigley. So sounds like he ran him down the stretch.
He parred the first hole when everybody else was birdieing and not eagling it.
But back 934.
I mean, the way that they fill out these fields, and I know some of it is there. I mean, there were legitimately guys in the WGC field this week that I'd never heard of.
Sebastian Soderberg, I think you said last week.
Yeah, I've never heard of you can roast me all you want. I've never heard of Sebastian Soderberg.
I looked at the qualification for how you get into those. Winning some really random tournaments gets you into these WGCs. Yeah. But my true rub of the green, Joel Scholem on the European Tour, had to take a boat to an island at the Hero Open to go play a shot. He had like this little canoe that was out. I don't even know why the boat was out there. Like he had to,
I don't think it was. I think they had to bring it in over the boat. From elsewhere on the lake because they have to go landscape that little island.
Oh, I got you. So he has to go out on this little island that he hit the ball. He takes a couple clubs in the boat with him, like throws the club onto the island as he gets out of the boat. I never got to see him hit the shot. I just saw him go climb out of the boat for it. But ball ends up on the island and you take a boat to go hit the shot. That is truly the rub of the green. Anything else before we do?
Rub of the green for me is Ricky's shot today.
Which one?
Off the rocks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, on 11.
And, you know, middle of the green.
Middle of the green.
Great shot.
It didn't end up factoring in a ton to his day, but that was wild.
That was a wild bounce.
I don't know. It went forward and left, but not over the green, right into the middle of the green. Are you ready to talk some Formula One?
Can we look ahead?
Sure.
First, we've got, obviously, the PGA next week. We'll have plenty on that. We are efforting a special guest for this week on the Trap Draw. Big thanks to Kyle Porter for doing the Memphis event. We also donated some money to the St. Jude's Fund on behalf of Kyle Porter.
Which I would say that them working in the kids into the broadcast was kind of a nice refresher. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get out of those kids, but a couple of them were awesome.
One kid was a total alpha.
Star.
He was hitting all the other kids' heads.
I know.
And then we've got the marathon. So the LPGA is back in Sylvania, Ohio this week. So good to see them back. And then we've got the Portland Corn Ferry event, which is a favorite of mine. Excited to see that. I plan on doing a Instagram Live with Lauren Coughlin, our young hitter out on the LPGA. She had nothing but awesome things to say about Inverness. She got off to a great start yesterday. She said the conditions were absolutely insane yesterday afternoon. So, but yeah, props to Inverness again. I mean, I think that was one of the coolest. Like, I'm so excited for the Solheim Cup there.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic. Props for that event came together quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and there was no sponsor for it, and they got together $1 million purse for it. So I don't know how they're doing it, but that's really impressive. And my point earlier is just I'd love to get some more eyeballs on it. So any opportunity they have to, you know, not go up against big PGA Tour events, I think would serve them very well.
And that's where, like, going back to the West Coast stuff, the more they can do on the West Coast and finish up in prime time, the more viewers you're going to get.
All right, at Char Force One, what's the golf equivalent of winning a Grand Prix with a flat tire? I've got my answer to this.
It's basically, I mean, it's your caddy snapping your putter in half on the 16th hole.
It's Robert Streb at Greenbrier, right?
Yeah.
He had to putt with a wedge and got into a playoff with it. He didn't end up winning that event, but of course we're talking Lewis Hamilton won the British Grand Prix today on a flat tire on the final lap. Max Verstappen went into the pits to go. He could not catch Hamilton. It was very clear he was not going to catch him. He went into the pits to get new tires to go for fastest lap. And if he hadn't pitted, so Hamilton then blows out a tire. If he hadn't pitted, in hindsight, that's what I'm going to say.
I'm curious on, I know the points are valuable.
Yeah.
Is the one point that valuable?
I don't even think it's that much about the one point as it is securing second. Getting a fresh set of tires, something could have gone bad with his tires coming down the stretch.
But it seemed like his tires were in better shape.
They couldn't have known how bad Lewis's were.
No, Lewis was all over the radio. They were talking about it all, you know,
but
all
Lewis
over the telecast
said,
and everything.
Lewis said afterward, he said he thought they were totally fine. He must have hit debris to make it go fully flat. He was not going
to... Something had to have happened on the track today, right?
Clearly.
Because
Bottas's tire just completely got nuked.
Bottas's tire. And then Latifi pulled a Bryson, first of all, and said, hey, get these cameras out of here after he crashes. That, and then it was a boring race for the entire middle part. The start was great. Grosjean's out of control.
Steve Hamblin said, don't let today's Formula One race in the UK put you off. Some races are like that. Guaranteed next time out will be prime time again. I thought it was great.
No, it was great. Yeah. I mean, I think that was so Bunky Perkins, he watched his first race today and he was like, honestly, I like all the ancillary elements and the side elements.
Dude, I think it's a really good sign for our F1 fanhood that the people that are real fans are like, no, that was a boring one. Like, and I still enjoy the shit out of them. All the strategy that comes in it.
The whole 2 hour thing is perfect.
It is. No commercials. I will say Mercedes does kind of ruin it. So when, like, I don't like rooting against them, but when stuff starts to go bad for them, it's way more exciting.
I like rooting for Hamilton, but against Bottas.
Yeah. Bottas just seems like too much of a system.
Because I feel like rooting for Hamilton's like rooting for Tiger.
Yes.
In the early 90s or in the early 2000s. Whereas Bottas just seems like, very, very good driver in his own right. Seems a little bit more like,
but he's like a Davis Love almost.
That's a perfect example. Yeah. And it's like, you know, he's never going to win the big one. But yeah. He's just constantly, he's a professional. He's always going to be in the mix. Ferrari is a complete disgrace.
And I
like Charles Leclerc.
He got crowned with the podium today.
Randy's all over McLaren. Are you a McLaren guy or no?
I like McLaren. I like Zach Brown. You don't like Zach Brown. I think he's totally fine.
He's just too much for me.
He doesn't seem like that much to me.
He's always got the hair coiffed. He's got the stiff collar shirts. It's just a lot.
Man. I don't know. I like Lando.
Randy loves Lando. I think Sainz might get exposed next year at Ferrari.
So I meant to look this up, just to get back to the conversation on Verstappen, but I forget which race it was, but in a recent race, that Max did the same exact thing. He was behind and not going to catch the guys in front of him and went into the pits to get fresh tires to go for fastest lap and like go for a true fast finish. And no one said shit about it when that happened that time. And this time, Hamilton, like, that's a freak. That shit doesn't happen to Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, but and I get it. Like, the tires, you know, some people were saying, oh, the tires should have lasted longer. Some were saying, no, they were on them for 40-plus laps. But five of those laps were basically practice laps,
yeah,
or caution laps, and some of the guys were all over the pace car for going way too slow today too. So I don't know. I mean, I think seeing what happened, and I know Bottas's thing happened right as Max went into the pits and everything like that. But my big thing, like, why can't Albon qualify decently? Because he was the fastest guy out there, non-Mercedes, all day.
Yeah, it was wild, like, how well they followed it when he came out in last after having to pit and take the 5 second penalty. He came out in last and they were still following him, like, he's gonna get back in the points, and he just,
sure enough,
catapulting past racers on the inside.
Will Buxton was, and he called this out on Twitter, he was right to say it, I think props to Pierre Gasly for, I think he finished P7 or P8, and really, like, kind of, but like his fourth really solid race in a row.
He went past someone and gave a, they cut into the audio and he's like, yeah, baby.
Dude, I'm just, I need my man George Russell at Williams to get on a better team. And then
Pierre was P7 today.
P7. Yeah. And then I was so disappointed in Racing Point this week.
Well, Sergio Perez testing positive for COVID. That's a tough break.
Yeah, and then Nico Hülkenberg not even making
couldn't
the
get
start.
The car started. Is that his fault? I missed what happened there.
No, and then Stroll looked like shit today.
Yeah,
that car looked awful. You know, I'm excited next year to see what happens with Ricciardo at McLaren, and get him out of that Renault.
The audio inside Lewis Hamilton's car during that last lap is amazing. Like the driver counting down, like, Verstappen's 18 behind you, he's 16 behind you, and then they get to the very end. Like, Lewis didn't even know that he won. He's like, I didn't see the checkered flag. And like, hey, you won, mate. You won. Yeah. You did great job. He's like, Do I stop? Like, it for, you know,
three how, wheels
for how? Yeah, getting it. And shout out to Bottas for getting that car all the way around the track on three wheels, because he got the flat at
Did he finish?
Yeah, he did finish. He finished in 11th, so no points. Yeah. But he got the flat in the worst possible spot. He couldn't get into the pits because he, like, had just passed the pit lane. So
yeah, hated seeing my guy Kevin Magnussen get bounced there at the start, and then Grosjean's completely out of control. They got to do something about him. It's absurd.
He finished 16th despite being up there for a long period of time.
I got one more thing I forgot to call out. Just looking back, I think David Bergoglio, I just want to say another thing about that. This was his first start in his major medical. So the changes that they've made this year, this was his first start of 2020. on his major medical, so everything will basically, he's down to one start. Other guys, their starts have basically been refreshed to the beginning of the year, but since he hadn't had a start yet, this guy's been milking a major medical since 2004.
It's incredible.
He gets $20,000 a month from the tour.
Tax-free?
Either tax-free or after taxes. They had to change the rules because of him. So like guys that are legitimately hurt can't stay on a major medical for more than like 3 years now. It's insane to me. And for whatever reason, he pops up at Reno every year. Yeah, so he's down to one start. I'm really curious to see when and where he makes that start. Because, you know, he's well over 50 at this point. He plays in a bunch of money games out in Palm Springs and in the desert. You know, like the way that the tour fills out these, beyond Bergoglio, because I know that's kind of one thing, but the way that the tour fills out these opposite field events is so, they can't even go down far enough on the priority list. It's crazy. Whereas like, all right, this week, especially this year of all years, call up the top five guys or top seven guys from the Korn Ferry Tour
right.
and say, hey, go win one, get in basically.
Battlefield yourself in.
Call up Davis Riley, Will Zalatoris, Ruffles, you know, guys like that. And I give Reno credit for Justin Suh was in the field. He had missed out four Monday Qs in a row. They gave him a spot. He finished his top 25. It's exhausting seeing guys like, you know, Frederik Jakobsen, which my son is literally named after Frederik Jakobsen, Ted Purdy, Omar Uresti. There's just some dog shit guys in the field that should not be playing in a PGA Tour event.
It's time to go watch the end of the Barracuda. Matthias Schwab and Troy Merritt are tied right now, but Merritt's got a lot more holes to go, so he looks technically probably not in the lead, but looks to be in the lead. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in and getting pumped for Major Championship for the first time in over a year. We got some Major Championship golf. We're going to be doing live shows. We're going to be doing pods during the week. We are going to be cranking out the content and watching a hell of a lot of golf this week.
What was the last major?
The UK British Open presented by Her Majesty the Queen, Portrush.
Shane Lowry.
Yeah.
God, that feels like
forever.
4 years ago.
So, man. TC, have a wonderful evening. We'll see you for our Monday morning meeting, as we always do. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Cheers.
Crack on.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!